The G20 summit in New Delhi, India, wrapped up earlier this month with a leaders' declaration issued under the theme of One Earth, One Family, One Future. While much of the media coverage has focused on the geopolitical implications of the summit, this year's declaration also made significant strides looking to gender equality and women's empowerment, including a direct call for increased efforts to, quote, close gender gaps and promote the full, equal, effective, and meaningful participation of women in the economy as decision makers. To take a closer look at how women's empowerment was incorporated into the G20 process, I'm pleased to welcome Ayaka Matsuno, Director of the Gender Investment and Innovation Program at SPF. She also served as a co-head of the Japan Delegation for the Women 20, or W20, which is an engagement group that advocates for the inclusion of gender-related issues in the G20 process. Ms. Matsuno joined SPF Worldviews to look back on her work with the W20 in Japan, discuss the significance of the goals set in the G20 Leaders' Declaration, and explore the ways that economic empowerment can accelerate progress toward gender equality. It has been a very busy time with the G20 Leader Summit wrapping up earlier this week on September 10th in India. And there's a lot to dig into regarding the outcomes of that meeting. But before we jump into the results of the G20 summit itself, I wanted to discuss your work as the Japan representative for the Women 20, for the W20 engagement group for the G20 process. So first, could you just talk about what your role was in the W20 process and what were the outcomes of that W20 meeting?
Thank you very much for this opportunity. And my name is Ayaka Matsuno, the Director of Gender Investment and Innovation Program of the Sasakawa Peace Foundation. And I'm very happy that I'm part of this co-head of W20 Japan delegates this year. As you know, that W20 is one of the engagement group for G20, and for specifically talking about women's economic empowerment. And so each state of G20 member states have these delegates. And in Japan, we have around 10 people altogether, and then we form this delegation from Japan. And then so we have to come up with W20 communique, which will be fed into, hopefully, G20 Leaders Declaration. So our role is to really make sure that, you know, women's perspective is always incorporated into this G20 Leaders Declaration. So in terms of the process, we had a launching event in February this year in India. We divided it into task force, and then we have numerous online meetings, and we have three different international conferences, and then put our communique together. We started to discuss about these five priority areas: climate change, entrepreneurship, digital divide, and education skills development, and then labor market participation, and grassroots leadership. The priority areas are decided by the chair of W20, which is India this year. But then W20 itself has been focusing on labor, finance, and also digital, so that the three main topics are always there.
And what were the main outcomes that were represented in the W20 communique? What were kind of the main points that were put through in that document?
We have five priority areas we wanted to really put feature in. But on top of that, we made it very, very clear that we cannot really keep repeating to talk about the same thing and then not really be accountable for what we have promised that we will do. Because each year we have W20 communique, and a part of the recommendation is integrated into G20 Leaders Declaration. And we think that, oh, good, you know, all the G20 leaders have agreed to do this. But then nobody was following up and then making sure that the progress was made, and there was no monitoring process. So we made it very clear that we have to do that so that we can really, you know, reach the target that we set. So this year, G20 Leaders Declaration, they took our recommendation seriously. So that was one of the, you know, key point that is integrated into the G20 Leaders Declaration. One specific target that they already committed is halving gender digital divide by 2030. So gender digital divide, we are talking about affordability, accessibility, literacy, skills, and also the protection of women's rights. That's a very ambitious target, but they said that they will do it. And then they held ILO and OECD accountable for the annual progress report. So we didn't expect that ILO and OECD will be named to be the person to really report back to the G20. But at least, you know, the point is that everybody knows that this is time for us to really keep track on what kind of progress we have made and then what is not done yet.
That's such a key area, because as you say, even if it's included in a leader's declaration, if there's no follow-up, if there's no accountability, if there's nothing that comes after that, it's just words. Yeah. On a page. To integrate that, it seems like it was a really key aspect of W20 that was able to successfully be represented.
Yeah, so we are very happy. So after this in the G20 declaration came out, W20 community, we are connected through WhatsApp. So all the messages were coming in, oh, congratulations, this and that, this and that. We thought that it was a pretty good result, this very ambitious target of having gender digital divide by 2030. And also another target that is included, that's the Brisbane target. The Brisbane target is really the reason why W20 exists. So it was already set up in 2018. Basically talking about closing the gap of labor force participation by 25% by 2025. And then we have another 2 years, less than 2 years.
Yeah, it's quite soon.
Yeah. And then still we haven't really been tracking the efforts. So we really have to accelerate our efforts so that we can really make the Brisbane target achievable.
That's interesting, the goal being 2025, and when that goal was set, perhaps that seemed quite in the distance, and now it's here. Did that come into the dialogue at all as you were talking about how to move these projects forward, the fact that these deadlines that had been set for a long time are kind of at our doorstep right now?
Definitely. We always keep track on our time that is remaining for the target, but then in principle, everybody says that to achieve gender equality, we need to have another 200 years or something. So we have to accelerate the process. You know, that's the common understanding of everybody that we work in W20.
One of your responsibilities was taking the W20 communique to the Japanese government to inform their process with the G20 summit itself. I'm curious if there was any specific area that piqued the interest of the Japanese government representatives you met, or was there any kind of indication of where Japan itself maybe is focusing its energy regarding W20 initiatives?
We basically gave our W20 communique translated into Japanese to the G20 Sherpa, Mr. Ono, Deputy Vice Minister for Foreign Affairs. So he is the person, a key person for G20. Whenever we exchange our view on what is included and what is very important for us, you know, he was very, very happy to learn all the, five priorities. But then also he mentioned about this important feature of nexus between climate change and gender. So this year, for the first time, G20 Leaders Declaration included this important point. We have been talking about it for the last 3-4 years in different platforms, and then people started to realize that the impact that climate change will bring are disproportionately affecting women and girls. For this year, for the first time, they clearly stated in the preamble, as well as also in dedicating one section where they start talking about that we need to accelerate mitigation and adaptation of climate change using women and girls and their power and then their agency to accelerate the process.
I also would like to ask about any areas that you wish had been included in the leader's declaration that perhaps did not make it this time.
We have these 5 priority areas, right? Climate change, entrepreneurship, digital divide, and education, skills development, and then labor market participation, and grassroots leadership. So actually, all of them are integrated into this leader's declaration, one way or the other. But then grassroots leadership is one theme that W20 India was very much promoting. And then whenever we went to the W20 conference in India, they tried to really feature the different kind of success and then also best practices for women's economic empowerment. Not only women entrepreneurs who are top unicorn CEO type of women, but at the same time there are some micro entrepreneurs in the rural area, rural India, who may not be really speaking English or, you know, not have a higher education level, but still they came up with such a unique empowerment system called a self-help group, and then try to really build the capacity to grow together with other women. So that was very interesting, and then we wanted to really see that featured into Leaders Declaration a little bit more. They didn't really use the word women's leadership or women-led development, which was the theme of W20. But instead, G20 Declaration talked about women as decision makers. So slightly different way of saying, but then basically that the essence was included.
So now we have this Leaders Declaration with these benchmarks and with this monitoring mechanism embedded into it. So what are you hoping to see happen next?
Yeah, I forgot to mention one thing that is also a big step forward, is that they decided to set up the working group, official working group for women's empowerment for G20 Women's Ministerial, which is the most institutionalized mechanism for G20, meaning that, you know, they really wanted to, you know, put women's empowerment at the core of G20's work. We don't know the detail of how it's going to function or who is going to be included in that, you know, working group. But when we have this working group directly working with G20 Ministerial, we can actually voice our concern directly to the center of G20 discussion. So that is a really good step forward.
I would like to transition our conversation a bit to your work specifically in the foundation. And I think a lot of it overlaps quite substantially with the conversation we've been having so far. I'd like to kind of ask you to just tell us what exactly the Gender Investment in Innovation Program does and what is the ultimate goal of this program.
So basically, our program was starting from Asia Women Impact Fund at our core. So Asia Women Impact Fund is a very unique initiative done by, you know, private foundation like us. Basically, we wanted to, you know, utilize a part of our endowment to invest into funds that are specifically targeting women and girls and then bring positive change into their life. Actually, whenever we talked about the G20 having digital divide by 2030, USAID started the initiative called Women in Digital Economy Initiative. They actually mobilized already $515 million for this initiative, and then also brought so many different government and also private sectors to work with that. And then one of which is Australian government. And Australian government is investing in Women's World Banking for this initiative. So this Women's World Banking is an NGO based in America, but then they focus on financial inclusion for women in the world. And they have the investment wing, and they set up this fund called Women's World Banking Capital Partners II, which is basically focusing on investment to financial service providers that are specifically promoting financial inclusion for women in the world. And then actually Asia Women Impact Fund that we have is an investor to this Women's World Banking Capital Partner II. So indirectly, we are supporting this initiative of, you know, digitalization. So going back to Asia Women Impact Fund, you know, we wanted to focus in Asia. We have this investment wing that really tried to promote the investment flowing into women's empowerment and also gender equality. We thought that we need to really have capacity building for the recipient of the fund, which is women entrepreneurs. So we started to, you know, utilize our project funds to really work with establishing or strengthening ecosystem for women entrepreneurs in different countries in Southeast Asia. And especially we are now doing it in the Philippines. We will start working in Indonesia and also Cambodia. Altogether, our program is focusing on women's economic empowerment. And whenever you have economic empowerment, that really have a multiplier effect, and then women become more confident. Women have a little bit more voices over their family business or family issues. And then also if they can actually have income, they can translate that income into children's education and health. It is very clear that, focusing on economic empowerment is the kind of shortcut for us to really make the impact for women's life. So that's why we decided to focus on economic empowerment.
That was our conversation with Ayaka Matsuno, Director of the Gender Investment and Innovation Program at SPF. You can learn more about this program by visiting our website at www.spf.org/en. That's all for this episode of SPF Worldviews. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.